This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to the Football Out West show on FNR Football Nation Radio. Proudly brought to you by Georgie's on Vista, the new home of the George Cross Soccer Club.
Good evening and a very warm welcome to you wherever you may be. You are tuning in to the Football Out West show here on FNR Football Nation Radio. My name is Tonchi Prusak and I am your host for the next 60 minutes. And joining me here in the studios here in Docklands at FNR is my very, very welcome guest co-host tonight, Josip Zilic. Josip, how are you?
Oh, good, thank you. Thank you for having me, Tonchi, and the Football Out West program and listeners and viewers.
Now, you've got a real connection out to in the western suburbs, and a lot of people do know you. You've got a couple of kids, or you've got one kid still at Point Cook, and another one was playing there up until recently. Now they've moved down to Corio.
Yeah, well, my early days reached out to Melbourne Knights, Melbourne Croatia in the early days as a junior. I'm still an avid supporter of the club, and I love going down to Summer Street to get some action on a Friday night. And it was a great win by the boys last Friday against Avondale. My daughter plays for Point Cook, the senior women's team in State 4 West. And my oldest son, Carl, was at Point Cook until the start of this season. He's ventured back home to, and he's now playing for Corio and DV2.
You're also a past president of North Geelong Warriors, hence the North Geelong Warriors kit there. You were helping me out with the Geelong Region Soccer Show earlier. And, geez, we had some really, really interesting chat. Some of the interesting chats we had also was with Steve Horvat, the football operations director of the new Hyundai A-League club, Western United. And as part of tonight's show, we're going to have the CEO, Maurice Bisetto, joining us a little later on. That's going to be very, very exciting, very interesting.
It'd be interesting to get Maurice's take on what he experienced last night. Steve's was very football-focused, and you expect that. But from the whole of club perspective, I think Morris will have a little bit of a different insight for us.
Yeah, we'll talk very much about that. But just the latest update for all the Western Suburbs people is that there has been a little bit of a change in date as far as the Western United Roadshow is concerned. The Werribee event is going to be next Monday night, not Wednesday. And next Wednesday night, it's moving to Ballarat. So last night we had 150, 200 or so people
about
in Geelong.
I'd say,
thereabouts, 200 people at the President's Room at the GMHBA Stadium. It was fantastic to listen to Mark Rudan, the coach, and imparting his philosophy, his methodology, his philosophy, his coaching, the culture that he wants to bring into the club as well.
He is one impressive individual, and you can see he's got a lot of conviction about the way he wants to go about things and what he expects from players that come into the fold. Very value-based individual, and he's trying to impart the club's values into the players as well.
Now, big shout out to my regular co-host, Craig Filer, who is watching. I believe he's somewhere interstate on work commitments, or so he reckons. He said he couldn't attend tonight's show. I think he's just sick of me. I think that's what it is. But Josip, you've been doing a good job.
Probably in a casino somewhere. Who knows?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Anyway, Craig has had a massive, massive week this week with the Cardiff City boys out at Point Cook Soccer Club. That was held last weekend. From all accounts, things went exceptionally well.
Shout out to everyone at Point Cook and Craig's involvement,
and also to Williamstown as well. They were involved in the actual big day there as well. And look, everyone just said it was an incredible day from all accounts. So it's great to see the clubs working together. It's great to see a lot of it's thriving. It really, really is thriving football in the West. But we're going to very, very quickly, we're going to go through some of the news that's making headlines, I guess. And we're starting off with the Doherty Cup and the Nike FC Cup. And then we're going to bring in representatives from Barnstoneworth United FC in our club focus. And that's going to be really, really exciting because, geez, I've got a great story to tell. But Josip, Doherty Cup and Nike FC Cup. What are the fixtures coming up?
Jeez, I used to love this the Doherty Cup as a kid. I dreamt about it all year long. And then
speaking of history.
Only because Melbourne Croatia always in it. But anyway, tonight, Moreland Zebras are taking on Hume City over at Jack Edwards Reserve. And it's late in the match with a 1-0 lead to Hume City, courtesy of Delich. And tomorrow night, another blockbuster at Broadmeadows Valley Park at the home of Hume City is Melbourne Knights against Bulleen Lions.
And Melbourne Knights are the only Western side, Western Suburbs-based side left in the semi-final. So let's hope that the Melbourne Knights can get up and represent the West in a big way. And likewise, with the Nike FC Cup, there's only one in the women's equivalent. There's only one Western Suburbs-based team in it, and that's Calder United. And who are they playing?
They're taking on Heidelberg. And we know from the Geelong radio show that Heidelberg's in there courtesy of an admin error from courtesy of the Galaxy United. But good luck to both teams, especially Calder United, for being our Western representative. But
I'm actually commentating the Galaxy Heidelberg game on Sunday, actually, and it'll be interesting to see how they do front up, 4 days or 3 days after that game, because Calder United obviously are doing great guns in the WNPL at the moment, on top of the ladder, runaway leaders, and it's going to be a very, very tough game, that one at Wembley Park on Thursday, and in the other game as well, which is tomorrow night at CB Smith Reserve, Box Hill United coming up against Melbourne University. Now, Melbourne University, I think, are a State League One competition side.
Correct. They are a State League One side.
And those are the dulcet tones of our third member of our team, Josh Parrish. We always forget to somehow introduce you, Josh.
Well, you've already spoken to me on the Geelong show.
Yeah, we have. But that was the Geelong show. That was, that's just history now. This is the present. Mate, you've done something to your leg. What has been going on?
Well, I was playing soccer on Saturday, tried to clear a ball, didn't quite connect, overextended my knee and out popped my patella from its socket. So ouch. My kneecap, it thankfully popped back in, but I am in the knee brace on crutches at the moment, so out of action for quite some time. Thankfully, I was able to make it into the studio tonight for this fine program. But
mate, when are we going to do a caller game together? You've got a couple of games on this weekend, have you?
I'm going to be down at Oakley on Saturday night again. It's becoming a regular haunt of mine, actually. I just go there for the Savakis.
I was going to say,
pretty sensational.
You're going to meet me, aren't you?
he's a young man, but he's got no social life, isn't it? Very sad. No, that's good to see. Who's Oakley coming up against?
Oakley is playing, help me out here. Who's Oakley playing? My co-commentator Lockie Flanagan behind the glass will know. It should be a fantastic game.
No, it should be. Yossip, what
Dandenong City.
Dandenong City.
Ooh, that would be a blockbuster.
That would be an excellent
A team of ex-A-League stars there. That is going to be a blockbuster. We'll have to tune in. Yossip, what else is making news?
Look, there's a lot of talk about the NCIP being abolished.
Ooh, that is going to be that's a hot topic. Let's talk about that for a little bit.
And our West is beautifully diverse, and I think it's fantastic that we've finally got rid of something that has been a stigma, a thorn in the side for many people from many backgrounds. Congratulations to FFA for finally making that decision to move past this, but it should never have been there in the first place.
Do you reckon they had an option? Do you reckon this is forced upon them?
One could think that way.
The conspiracy theories.
But look, why would you knock back the beautiful colours and cultures that we have in this country? So many festivals we have. We celebrate constantly the different diverse festivals we have, even in sexuality and gender and all that sort of stuff. I mean, why would you go and tell a certain section of sport that you can't display your heritage?
And if ever there was a good example of the beauty and the richness and the kaleidoscope of all these cultures, it's in the West, Melbourne's West. It's what's made Melbourne's West so magical, so culturally enriched. We were talking about in the Geelong show how once a year all the cultures get together harmoniously, celebratory, at the Paco Festa, and there's a few of those different types of festivals that happen in the Wyndham area, in the Brimbank area, the Melton area. Yet when it comes to football, our greatest maybe tool or instrument for how a lot of these migrant communities have contributed to Australian society, we're hamstrung. We can't do that. So, hopefully this is the sign or the start of something wonderful for football in this country. And look, you know, let's also hope that you know, people have got that little bit of brains in their head, as they'd say, an old Croatian saying, and people don't be stupid about it. We have seen a couple of unsavoury incidents this year and at NPL level and at state league level. Let's hope that doesn't continue. And maybe this is an opportunity as well for some of the older heads, the elders of each of the clubs and whatever, just to pull up some of the young whippersnippers and just say, hey, you're ambassadors for your culture, you're ambassadors for your club, you're ambassadors for your locality. You know, behave the way you ought to behave. So hopefully this is going to be a golden era for football in our country. And later on we'll be talking about, you know, what the beauty of history and culture has done for a club like Barnstoneworth United.
Absolutely.
And they've got a really great story to tell.
Yeah.
We might take a little bit of a break. And speaking of Barnstoneworth United, we might bring in one of the club's founders to really give us a great history lesson about the club that is Barnstoneworth United, Jason Purser. So a little bit of a break, some messages from our sponsors, and when we be back, we will have a nice educational trip down memory lane.
Club Focus.
Welcome back to the Football Out West show here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Before we bring our first guest in, the club focus, Barnstoneworth United. Josip, you've got a full-time score from the Doherty Cup game being played tonight.
Yep. So the final score over there at Jack Edwards Reserve is Moreland Zebras 0, Hume City 1.
And a big thank you to Brenton Ray, who sent us a comment. And he's saying the 2019 Doherty Cup final to be played at Kingston Heath Soccer Complex on Saturday, August the 10th, kickoff at 5 p.m. Brenton does a fantastic job at Hoppers Crossing, and he runs the North and Western State League Facebook pages as well. And there's another comment we've got as well from a Mr. Filer. He says, you look far too comfortable, Mr. Zilich.
Mate, I'm just keeping it warm for you, mate. Relax.
Good on you, Craig. Wish Craig was here, but he's not. So we're going to go with the present people here in the studio. And welcome to the microphone, or welcome to the studio, one of the founders of Barnstoneworth United, who are looking rather resplendent in their kits over here. Jason Purser. Jason, welcome to the Football Nation Radio's Football Out West show.
Well, that's my absolute pleasure. Yeah, no, it's really good to be here. We're, I guess, flattered that you're interested in hearing our story.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know Barnstoneworth United, I suggest you YouTube it, and you'll see this very unique entry that Barnstoneworth United players make when they come onto the field. Now, we'll talk a little bit about all that, but you're based in Williamstown, which itself is steeped in history and are indeed a very proud club. But you started off in the amateur leagues, is that right? And how did that come about? How did the idea of Barnstoneworth United get formulated, I guess?
Look, it started with, believe it or not, back in the Industrial League days.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play for TAA, and half of our players used to play at Middle Park, which used to be VRI, which were Victorian Railways. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, we got to the ripe old age of about 30 and decided that there was some common ground between some of the players. We're all expats anyway, so we used to, I think we were more interested in the drink than the football, to be fair.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, sure it does, and still are.
Yeah.
But so myself and a chap called Keith Charlesworth at their Middle Park, I brought six or seven players across and sided here, and we started Barnstoneworth. We had 16 players, all handpicked, good quality players. But it wasn't just about the football, you know, we tried to do things a little bit differently. We'd all played at a reasonable standard, and it was, we thought, what can we do differently? And it was more about charity. So we decided to pick up the charity baton and run with it, and we've been very successful doing that.
Now, there are other Barnstoneworth Uniteds around Australia, is that right?
Oh, God, they're everywhere.
Is it like a franchise or something?
they're everywhere. They're everywhere. We used to get Sydney. Sydney used to come across to our presentation nights,
yeah.
and we used to play a game on the Saturday, a charity game on the Saturday. But we all wore the same strip, so that was hilarious.
Like a branch, yeah. There's a Central Coast, I think, and something like that as well. So
Tasmania, Central. They're all over.
Yeah,
there's
Central Coast.
All over the place.
Now, Josip, you've got a little bit of a history in the Industrial League. Now we're really showing our ages folks. But tell us a bit about your recollections of the old days in the Industrial League. And did you ever come up against Barnstone with United?
No, I didn't come up against them. I played for a team called Osijek. Okay. Who you guys replaced because they came to the point where they couldn't field any more teams. Barnstonworth came in, and gentlemen like Conrad Taylor and Tony Warrilow, I used to work with Tony Warrilow.
Okay.
And he brought me along to a little bit of an experience.
He told you they were gentlemen.
Hey, don't pick on the Scousers, mate. All right?
It is after 8:30, so we, you know, the occasional, you know, adults only terminology can be utilised.
Yeah. Okay.
No, but that brought me over, and exactly how you put it, and I love that. We talk about it. You can explain the introduction, how the players come on the park, but I just love the culture around the club, and getting on the beers afterwards, and telling long tales.
Yeah, and they're getting longer.
Now, Jason, how has that transitioned to the State League? Because this year, for the first time, the senior men's team, I guess, has now entered the State 5 State League competition. And how has that been treated? Like when some of these teams have now seen the unique entrance, have they sort of like, what the hell is going on? Have they had a WTF moment, or have they really embraced the colour and the spectacle of it?
Look, I think we're lucky that that culture came first, as I probably said before. It came first. So behind that, we've been lucky to sign several good players, and one of them was Charlie Egan. And myself and Keith met with him. It was a bit of a clandestine meeting, but we met with him about 3 years ago and said, listen, come across. We want to build a pathway between our juniors and our seniors. Charlie's always been about junior development. He's always been about giving kids a free hand. You know, it's not just about structure. It's sort of about letting them express their qualities on the pitch.
And for those of you too young to remember, Charlie Egan was a god of the National Soccer League days. He played for, was it Brunswick Juventus and South Melbourne? And he was one of those players who was just extraordinarily talented.
From an opposition fan's perspective, he was a thorn in my side.
Yes, he was indeed.
Now he's a thorn in our side.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Charlie, is he still finicky about putting the jerseys out properly?
And your jersey's got to have the numbers up
and nice and straight.
That's it.
He hasn't changed a bit then.
Mate, he's quality. Like, takes things very seriously like that. There's no abuse of the equipment. All of those little things are very, very important to Charlie, as well as, you know, the way that we play the game. And we've been very lucky behind ourselves and bringing the likes of Charlie in. It's meant that we've attracted the right type of players, and not just the right footballers, the right type of people.
Yeah, it's important to a club and its values that it sets.
It's amazing.
You've expanded unbelievably over the years, even into the women's game, and we'll speak with Deb shortly. Mm. But, you've got to set some sort of values there to upheld.
Look, we've been lucky. We've been going, this is our 30th year.
30th, wow.
Yeah, yep. 30th year, and we've still got seven founder members that started in the first 16 players.
Still playing?
Unfortunately, yes.
So obviously, apart from the senior men's team, there is a presence in the Victorian Amateur League still. Is it men's veterans team, is there? And there's juniors? What else is part of the Barnstoneworth United fabric?
But we've run with seven sides, senior sides, this year.
Wow.
And we've got upwards of 450 juniors behind the club. So we're one of the biggest clubs in the Western Suburbs.
So how many players in total would you have?
Registered, we would have probably 175 playing members.
Yep. Plus juniors, 400 juniors. Yeah, so 500 plus.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And you know, you're going to talk to Deb Thomas in a minute. She's been instrumental in starting the ladies' team. And I think that's put an extra arrow in our bow, you know. Like, I can't talk highly enough about the way football's gone in this country, and the ladies' game is amazing. I mean, you only have to look at the World Cup. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's huge.
I was saying to Deb before, actually, that I can actually name more female Australian players than I can male.
Yeah, it's a changing of the guard, isn't it? I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying, because if you were to ask me who started in the last 11 at the 2016 World Cup, well, 2016, was it?
2018.
A little bit behind the time. 2018.
You're
World
like
Cup.
Me. You've got long, short, and medium term memory loss.
Yeah, all of the above. I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Is that alcohol induced by any chance?
No.
We promote responsible drinking here.
Yeah, absolutely.
What were you talking about?
The recognition of the women's game. Yeah. But one thing I wanted to get you to sort of tell the story, the tale behind that is. The way the teams come out in the park, and does it emanate into the juniors when they come on the park?
Look, it's starting to. It's really starting to. We've built the pathway. The juniors started. You mentioned Conrad Taylor. There's several players that played for the senior club. Simon Hussey is another one. Mark Pilditch and Kieran Fitzpatrick. They all had kids roughly the same age. Mine are a little bit older, and they started the junior club, and it's gone from strength to strength from there, and now. The kids are not kids anymore. They're 18, 19, coming through to the senior side.
Yeah, good.
And we promote, you know, our philosophy is they play the best standard they can. So Charlie's the ideal person to push them to other teams. He knows other coaches, and if they're good enough, they go, and if they're not good enough, they stay. And it's really working. You get back to what you asked me before about the how it all came about. We decided to call ourselves Barnsmith. Sydney had started the year before us, so they're 31 years old. And it all started from a Ripping Yarn. Ripping Yarns was a show that Michael Palin put together. And one of the Ripping Yarns is called Golden Gordon. And if you watch, do yourself a favour, watch Golden Gordon, and you'll see that the players all march onto the field. They've all got long black shorts. They're all very old.
Dad's army.
It is Dad's army, mate. It is Dad's army. So... you know, we've bought into that, and as well as buying into that, as I said before, some of the charities we've given money to have been amazing. And there was a young burns victim from Papua New Guinea, Wesley. When he came over, we've actually paid for his translator to come over and stay
he was
in Melbourne.
An RPA, was he?
Yeah. And well, he's now 25 or 26, but when he first came over, his head was actually attached to his shoulder. So I've got photos of Wesley at our ground, completely covered in bandages.
Yeah, and that wonderful couple that helped him out.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, look, the whole story is a wonderful story, but it's gone on from there. So it's been a great journey, really, really great journey.
Well, speaking of your initiatives and how the club goes about organising itself, and you mentioned a lot about charity. Do you base a lot of your social activity based on charity, or is there other sort of
look? We're really even down to training nights. Right. Each team, each week, so one team for each week will actually have to do the food. So they produce the food, they pay for it, they bring the food down. The girls are the best. They can actually cook. So the girls are the best. But they bring all the food down, and then we sell the food to the players for $5 each.
Yeah.
And all of that money goes to charity.
Fantastic. Brilliant. So, applaud you for that initiative.
Yeah, as well as other bits and pieces, but that's one of them.
Mate, Jay, what are the future plans for the club? Look, better said, what would you, as a founding father of Barnstoneworth United, like to see develop the club in, say, the next 3 to 5 years? Continue doing what it's doing now, or add some other dimension to the club as well?
Look, I'm a firm believer in not forgetting your roots. I think we've got something, we've got a platform that works. And I think it's really important not to dissolve that in any way. But I think it's also important to have exit strategies for old people like myself. Right? So, you know, Sean Rissey is now our president of the club. He's considerably younger and probably a little bit more aggressive, but, you know, I'm there to calm him down. Or he's actually there to calm me down most of the time. But either way, it's working. So there's a meeting of the minds. We've put together a younger type committee. Deb's actually on it. And I think that from that perspective, it works. I think that as long as you don't forget your roots, as long as you culturally, you know, where you sit in the scheme of things. And, you know, we do things like football for fun, which is for physically and intellectually handicapped children to actually kick a ball. So we've got Mark Pilditch runs it now. Brian Patterson used to run it on a Saturday. were involved in that with football, now Football Victoria, I think. They were FFA, but or FFE, I should say.
It's the all abilities football.
It's the all abilities football. Yeah. There's
very doubt. It's really getting some runs on the board now, and it's becoming quite big. And they have gala days and things like that as well.
100%.
Yeah.
And I don't want to steal Deb's thunder, but also we've been chosen as a club to look at equal play, and equal play is around understanding the difficulties of women in general accessing sport. And it's not just from a mental perspective, am I good enough, should I be here, how do I wear this uniform, but also are the facilities good enough, and does it cater for ladies in the right way? So I'm sure Deb will probably go into that. I'm sorry, Deb, if I've stolen some of your
time. No worries, we'll get to that.
Any last words that you'd like to say to either Barnstoneworth Club members or any of the opposing players that you come across or just to the Western suburbs in general, the football community?
I'm a great believer of getting people out in the open. We had a documentary made about us and I spoke about obesity. And I think those things are very important. I see children now that are just sat in front of iPads and phones, and they're given these items just to entertain them. And there's much better ways of entertaining them out in the open, running around after a ball or doing what we used to do. I mean, I kicked a ball every day of my life until the age of about 18, and then life took over. But I think if you build yourself around structure and and like Charlie says, if you can, in the game of football, allow people a little bit of freedom to express themselves, I think it goes a long way. So,
tremendous. Jason, thank you very much for joining us on the Football Out West show on Football Nation Radio. We wish you, Barnstoneworth United, all your members and fans, all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jason. We're going to take a little bit of a break and then we're going to be speaking to the coach and instigator of the women's team at Barnstoneworth United, Deb Thomas.
The Change Rooms.
Welcome back to Football Out West show here. And in the second part of our club focus segment tonight, in the change room segment tonight, which this week is taking a look at the Williamstown-based Barnstoneworth United. Joining us here in the FNR studios, the coach of the Barnstoneworth United senior women's team, Deb Thomas. Deb, welcome to the Football Nation Radio studios.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Hey, Deb, welcome to the show. And would you like to open up by telling us about the women's team this year, how they're going and what competition they're playing in?
So we have State 4. Mm-hmm. We're having a lot of fun at the moment. We started off really well, but then there's a bit of a division in the league, essentially,
there's top three, four, five. Good.
It's making it very competitive, and we're learning a lot from them. So
it's good. Now, a little bit about the formation of the women's team. How long ago was it formed? How did it kick off? And was it straight into state leagues, or did you spend some time playing in a metro competition or something?
So it was originally my under-18s team. We came up 3 years ago. When we got too old for that. And we started off in the Vic Soccer. They had a women's division there. Mm-hmm. So we did 1 year there. And then the following year, which was last year, we had our first State 4 team. So the women's were the first into the State 4. And that was our former under-16 girls team that came up.
Yep.
And then we had to be able to play a bit of a mix between the two. But sadly, this last season kind of didn't have enough players for two teams. And then the Vic Soccer kind of fell over. So we've stuck with the State 4, and it's a mix of the two squads.
And was there a major difference as far as standard and maybe the approach to the game that you noticed from the Vic Amateur Soccer Leagues to the state leagues, or is it very similar?
No, very similar.
Very similar,
Pretty hard going, very competitive.
Now, with the addition of the women's team, how has the club itself changed? Is there less testosterone around the club? Or we did speak earlier with Jason that, the dimension of the club changes as well. How much has it changed, or has it not changed really?
No, it has changed. I think the guys might be a bit scared about how much it has.
Do tell us, what do you mean by that?
I've had to tread very gently, like I push when I need to push, and otherwise I try and let them think it's their own idea. So probably the biggest
win. That's what my wife always says. Yeah, exactly that.
The biggest win for us was the away change room is now female only, and that is the women's rooms. And the away teams, men's teams, aren't allowed to use it. And that has been the big thing, that we now have our own place.
HQ.
Yep. Sometimes I get a bit annoyed because the barbecue still gets shoved in there and a few other bits and pieces, but that's okay. We can deal with that. And it just means that we have a place now. As soon as, you know, we could start come for training, everyone comes in there, we sit down and have a debrief about last week's match, talk about what we're going to do in training, and then we head out into the park. And it's just meant that it's a real good gathering spot for everybody.
Yeah, really brought it together. Every team needs that communal spot where they can feel comfortable with each other and express their ideas and thoughts.
Yep.
Yeah, fantastic.
I'd say the hardest part is there's only one women's toilet, which is on the car park side. Yeah. So I've opened it up for all the junior girls as well, because I've done a bit of work with the junior teams, so the junior girls can be using those toilets and facilities as well.
Excellent. With regards to the women's state four comp team, are there any standout performers that you feel have excelling within
Keeper.
Your keeper?
My God, she gets very hard work
Can I just pause you there for a moment?
Yep.
My daughter plays for Point Cook. I made a point to go over to your keeper after the match.
The bravery
that she displayed that day.
What's her name? Give her a name. 5 seconds of fame.
Emma. Oh, yep. Emma, if you're listening.
She's in Japan, actually.
Well, then get the podcast, Emma. Listen to this on the podcast. I'll repeat my words, what I said that day. It takes a hell of a lot of courage to keep standing there and encouraging your teammates, even when you know it's not working out. And the positivity and encouragement she showed beyond her years.
Yes, she's only just 16.
Wow.
Yep.
I thought we're talking about someone who's in the late 20s, the level of maturity and this and that, but for a 16-year-old and a keeper, because we were talking about
earlier. I'm just.
She's a bit of a softy for a keeper.
Yeah.
She had a brilliant mentor last year. We had a player come down from Sydney, Chantel Kelly, who is a former State 1 up there, or was probably playing State 1 again up in New South Wales. Yeah. And she mentored Emma and showed her how to be positive on the ground, that even if you're feeling bad, how you can be part of the match by being so positive.
What's Emma's surname?
Hall.
There you go, Emma Hall.
Hill.
A player to watch in the future.
Yep.
Speaking of other junior players, in the junior ranks, amongst the juniors, are there any other talented young girls that are just really, you know, I guess head and shoulders and are going to shine for the women's team in years to come?
Definitely, and I would love to think that they would come through. One of them, she's only under 12s this year, so she plays with the boys, and I've been encouraging that for her to stay with them, because girls, you know, you have to reach a critical mass before you can build up a really strong team, and at the moment Barney's is mid-level, so, you know, we aim to be mid-range because that we have the, you know, philosophy of catering for everybody. The idea behind that in the end, though, is to be able to build up that critical mass so we can have A and B teams like we've got in the boys. And the only way you can do that, of course, is to encourage everybody to come along and to learn. So those girls who are complete standouts, though, I have them playing in the boys. Unless and then they come and play with the girls occasionally. But the only way they're going to get that pace and that number of players around them that are technically good is to play with the boys.
Now, that's interesting. I want to ask a question. So these girls that play with the boys, when they come back with the girls, do they have maybe the same level of aggression? Do they have that competitiveness?
Absolutely.
And is that maybe we're onto something here as far as getting our girls that are coming up through the ranks to that next level? Because I think we spoke with Steve Horvath, football operations manager of Western United, in the previous show, the Geelong Region Soccer Show, and he did mention something about the youth players, the junior players, being really learning to have that killer instinct as well. That real, doesn't matter what level of football you're playing, but that white line fever of you get there and you're really wanting to win. Once the game's finished, you know, you shake hands and all that kind of stuff, but maybe there's not enough of that with our younger players, and what you guys are doing, maybe that might be the secret to trying to get, you know, that oomph factor, particularly with the girls.
Yep. Those who are good too, so this particular girl, so she plays and then she'll come and play with the girls, and because she's just that bit higher standard, she pulls them up
with her.
Yep. Okay.
You know, because she understands the, keeping your shape a bit more. And while you get it, obviously, from your coach and from the sidelines continuously, you know, come on, why is there a hole in the middle there? Having a player like her on the pitch, because she's talking to them and they can hear her and they can see what she's doing, it just raises them up.
Yeah, if you get someone in there that can lead by example, one or two individuals,
then the message from the sideline isn't as fuzzy as it would appear to be.
Yeah. Or it makes more sense. Like, okay, I see what they're talking about now.
That's right.
Brilliant, brilliant.
So with regards to the female side of things, you've got your women's team and some junior sides by the sound of it.
Yeah, quite a lot.
What are the projected plans? Is it to grow the base of players? Is it to get promoted? Is it?
That would be brilliant. So the idea is that exactly the same with the men's, is that we have keep building up and have those teams for the players to come to. So in previous years, so when I was coaching like the under-16s and that, there was always those six players that were too old to continue to play, and we had nowhere for them to go. So we'd be sending them off to other clubs, which was always so sad.
Yeah.
And this way now we have somewhere for them to come, and I want to be building from that bottom up. So, yeah, it's I want to be competitive. You know, I've been doing all my – I've got all my coaching stuff going and all of that and getting there slowly. But, and, you know, you just need to get
coaching ranks built in too with the junior squads. Do you find that like for like, or do you have to really hunt around and find individuals to get involved in the coaching?
Yes, I'm very encouraging. Managed to get 25% of our coaches in the juniors are female.
Great.
That was me standing at a meeting with the junior mini roos going, women, you need to stand up.
Yeah.
I'm over all the men standing up. And my aim has been to get the female coach. There's been one female coach with every single female team within the next couple of years, and I'm one team off.
Yeah.
So ahead of schedule.
Congratulations. And it's a great statistic, and I wish it grows further for you as well.
Deb, thank you for joining us. And if we could clone you and distribute you to all these other different clubs, and I'll tell you what, we'd have so many progressive clubs out there. It's been great having you here on the Football Out West show. We wish you and Barnstoneworth United all the very best. Any last words either for the club members or the football fraternity out in the West?
Politicians for facilities.
Oh,
like
yes.
That.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, we need showers would be good.
Yeah.
No, just and a paint job.
Great.
Having access so you can't see straight into the men's showers when you're walking past would be awesome as well.
Yep. It sounds like we've got a call to the sports minister for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually,
but
next
generally,
week,
just embrace your women, embrace your girls. You know, treat them the same as you would treat the boys. They're no different. We're all the same.
Yep, we all love our clubs, don't we?
Yep, exactly.
Yep. Yep, Josip's got a daughter. I've got a daughter just started football this year. We know all about it, and it's the like I said earlier, it's the added dimension that a women's presence or a female's presence brings to a club is quite inspirational. Once again, thank you very much.
You.
And, we'll look forward to hearing some absolutely fantastic stuff about Barnstoneworth United in the foreseeable future.
Absolutely.
Now, we're going to take a little bit of a break, and when we return, we've got a very, very special guest, the CEO of new A-League club Western United, Maurice Bassetto.
The Boardroom.
Welcome back to the Football Out West show here on FNR Radio as we're doing some minor renovations here in the studio. We are running a little bit behind time, so we are going to get straight into our next guest, and what a guest he is. Last night, Josip, myself and you were both at the fan forum or the meet and greet that was held in Geelong by Western United, and it was a very, very exciting night. And on the line to tell us more about that and the road show, that the travelling road show, is the CEO of Western United and a man who's very, very familiar to Football Nation Radio listeners, Mr. Maurice Bassetto. Maurice, how are you?
Good, thanks, Sonchi. How are you going, mate?
Very good, and thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Mate, let's talk about last night and the first of several meet and greet forums. The one in Geelong, about 200 people attended. You spoke at that along with Steve Horvath, Mark Rudan, some of the players there as well. Tell us from your perspective, because Josip and I were just saying off air, it was a really inspirational night. It was exciting to be a part of history in the making.
No, yeah, look, you're spot on there. It was a great turnout. The buzz in the room and the excitement was fantastic. Look, we all had a little bit of our reservations heading down to Geelong, which is, you know, renowned AFL heartland. But to see so many football people in the room, and all really, really keen and excited about having an A-League club coming to the community was fantastic.
Morris, well done on last night's ratio. The big thing that I took out of it was the effort that you're putting into to making memberships very accessible and in different price ranges, and also the imminent fan experience that will come out of the stadium. Did you want to just enlighten the listeners who weren't able to be there last night what the discussion was about?
Yeah, look from the get-go, when you know, really sort of Lou and Steve and I started to talk about this, you know, over, you know, nearly 2 years ago now, we were just three football fans wanting to bring that football experience to football in this country. Part of the challenge is really, there's a couple of things. It's about being inclusive and making sure the product is affordable, first and foremost. And everything we've done so far is about being inclusive and affordable. And we always knew in the background, if the model that we put forward to the FFA came off and we were able to get a license and then build our own stadium, then we'd be in control of the fan experience. It's really difficult. I mean, every A-League club, I have no doubt, in the country, and not just that, AFL clubs and all professional sporting clubs, really do focus on giving the fan the best experience possible. But, you know, playing out of generic stadiums where you're one of a number of tenants, and it's a really difficult challenge. And we always knew that if we could build our own stadium, that we really had the opportunity to own the fan experience component. So, you know, it's inclusiveness and affordability, making sure that everyone can go that wants to go, and really encourage everyone to go. But off the back of that, that, you know, when we're in our own stadium, that we can really control the experience the fan gets. You know, we've all, you know, I don't want to talk about AFL too much, but we've seen what's happened with the sort of crowd behaviour and what they're doing in terms of the security. And you got the AFL, you know, blaming the management at Marvel. Well, you know, they own Marvel. It's the same people.
Yeah.
So that's just a cop-out, you know. And if we ever did that, it would be a cop-out from our point of view. So, you know, that's really the key, is when we own our own stadium, is really to be in control and making sure the fan experience is a real football experience.
Speaking of fan experience, Morris, I think what I took out of last night, and I had my two little kiddies there as well as my nephew, and, you know, afterwards going home, we're talking about it, and what they really enjoyed was going up to the players, going up to the coach, and everything was just so accessible. Like, you know, the whole experience yesterday, you know, everyone just seems so down to earth. And I guess that's a trademark of the West, you know, traditionally seen as the working class, but we're very grounded. We're very down to earth people. But the whole idea of this fan experience was really engaging. And Mark Rudan seemed to, you know, really harp a lot, the coach, about the culture he's wanting to bring to the club. And I think that was such a breath of fresh air, just listening to him talk about his vision and everyone else as well, about big word being culture, you know, the right culture. We don't want just the right player. We want the right culture and the right
person.
That, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was a huge thing. And that's something that seems to have been pushed right from the start, Morris.
No, that's a really good point, and you're right. But, you know, it's that balance. Look, our biggest strength is our biggest weakness. We're a new franchise. We don't have history. We don't have trophies. Mm. We don't have an existing fan and supporter base. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's a weakness. Well, yes, it is, but it's also a strength that allows you to build things from scratch and not have to unravel and unwind things of the past that may or may not have worked. And the one thing I have to say, which is has been incredibly overwhelming for me, is that every person that's joined our club, and specifically includes the players and the coaches, but also the staff that are working, you know, in the office, really understand their role and being part of forming this culture and doing that, you know, the players and coaches know that if they're not accessible and they're not that way disposed in their demeanour and how they interact with people, that we won't have fans and we won't have members, and it's going to be really difficult to build a culture. So we're sort of, it's a bit like, you know, the staff, the coaches, the players and the fans are in this together, and we're building it together, and culture is a big part of that.
Speaking of fans and speaking about culture, if we've got any listeners out there that would like to ask Maurice Bassetto a question, please put any questions in the Facebook feed under the comments section. Maurice, the roadshow. Yesterday was the start of the roadshow. It started in Geelong, where the bulk of the games will be played over the first two seasons at GMHBA Stadium. But it's going to move on now to Werribee and to Ballarat. What are the dates of those events?
Yeah, well, look, all the details are on it, are on the sort of digital media and socials, but. We're in Werribee on Monday night. That kicks off at 6:30, and we're in Ballarat on Wednesday, which also kicks off at 6:30. I think Monday night at this stage, Mark will be there. We haven't confirmed. I think we're trying to confirm tomorrow, but Panagiotis Kone, our marquee player, arrived in Melbourne tonight.
Wow!
So he'll be there on Monday. Andrew Durante and Scott McDonald, two of their names. These will be confirmed by tomorrow, and then Wednesday, I'm not sure which of the players, but we're actually going to, I think we're going to have maybe four or five players Monday or Wednesday, just having a chat to the football department today. Just trying to balance it. Training, our training starts on Monday, so we're just trying to balance the training commitments with getting the players there on Monday and Wednesday.
Yeah, exciting. So we just implore everyone to just stay tuned to Football Out West News, the Facebook page. We'll be reposting any information there, but that's going to be at the Wyndham Sports Centre, the Aquatic Centre there, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. They've got their community centre right next to the pool. And
yeah, that's where the one of the fan forums was held. Actually, the original fan forum, it seems like it was just yesterday, but it's been a long time between drinks. And that's the other thing. It must be really exciting to see it finally moving from an idea into a reality. You know, last night we saw the kits, we saw the coaches, we saw some of the players, we saw the whole room plastered with the logos. It's starting to feel like a real club, isn't it?
No, it really is. Look, adrenaline for some of us has been going even pre being awarded the license. So we've been sort of going 24/7 for nearly 12 months now. No one's feeling weary. We're all still really pumped and excited, and especially we're sort of some of the, I'll call ourselves veterans at this stage, but we're really thriving off the energy of all the new people and the new staff and coaches and players that are coming in with that excitement. So it really is, last night exceeded, well and truly exceeded my expectations in terms of turnout and interaction. You know, one of the things you guys would have noticed last night, the questions that were coming from the floor were, you know, real fan questions, that they weren't just standard sort of questions. They're sort of questions coming from fans that are genuinely interested about the experiences that they're going to expect and anticipate in season one.
Maurice, how many times did you say, now that's a very good question?
Well, they were. They really were. I also said a couple of times, I've got to be careful what I say because I'm sort of renowned as speaking out of school. But if it was not a good question, I probably would have said that's not a good question. But they were great. They were questions that again, at the end of the day, I'm a football fan. I've been involved in community football, and I've been a member of all the Melbourne A-League clubs, and I really want football in this country to be number one. And I've done everything I possibly can to support our game in this country, I was so impressed with the questions that were being asked.
I was impressed with two particular questions, Maurice. What's going to be the price of beer, and what kind of food you're going to have in the menu? And your response about the food was great, because you were talking about the diverse western suburbs and the people we have within it.
So I'm looking forward to your menu having Sanchoi Bao and Chivapi rolls.
Yeah, well, that'll be 100% in our new stadium, given our interim digs in the first couple of seasons being GMHBA Stadium and NAS in particular. Some of that is a lot of that is out of not just our control, any club's control. That's, you know, just tenants in stadiums at the end of the day. But when you own your own stadium, you know, whether you're going to, you know, Dinamore on a Sunday or Melbourne Knights on a Friday night or Moreland City on a Saturday, you know you're going to get the Moorlandburg, you know you're going to get, and the clubs are in control, and we'll be in control when we have our stadium of what the foods that we're going to have in there. And they will be the foods that football fans and the diversity of football fans and the communities within there will cater for all of them. So that is going to be exciting. I'll be having, you know, Sanchoi Bao and Chivapis as well, mate. That's for sure.
Good on you, mate. I think Tunchi's got a one.
Yeah, we've got a question. Maxi Sentich is saying, how are you planning to compete against an already established and successful Victory franchise? Melbourne Heart and now Melbourne City have experienced great difficulty growing a large supporter fan base. How does a new team plan to attract numbers through the gate and offer something Victory and City cannot, like a point of difference? Good question, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is, and it's a massive challenge, of course. And I think this was mentioned at least a couple of times by a few people last night, not just Steve Horvath and Mark Rudin, Rob Palmicciotti. You know, our role in this as a new expansion club in the A League isn't to convert Victory and Heart supporters. We acknowledge respect and really admire the fan bases and memberships that those two clubs have already developed in Melbourne. We're really hoping to, you know, that the significant part of our fan base and supporter base are new A-League supporters, those latent football fans that haven't really engaged in the A-League, either supporting or being a member or watching on TV. And you know, our sort of geographical demarcation and representing the West in terms of football. And one thing I've learned is we're not about uniting the West, which is part of the narrative of our Western United Football Club name, because the West is united. It's only taken me a couple of years spending some time there to really understand that the West is united, but we're going to try and unite the West in football. And like I said, that doesn't mean converting existing ailing fans, fans and supporters. It's really growing the game, growing our sport, striving to be the number one sport in this country, akin to most other countries in the world. You know, we've got the best product. It is a global product, and we're there to try and grow the game.
I guess the community engagement will be the big thing, and we've heard from Steve Horvath in the previous show, the Geelong Region Soccer Show, where he said in the next 3 months we're going to really, really hit the communities, not just the Geelong and Werribee, but Ballarat, I guess, and Western Melbourne in a big way. Warrnambool, that was another one that came out from last night. But looking ahead to round one, mid-October, what would be the ideal scenario? I know the draws aren't coming out till later this month, but would it be, you know, a Melbourne Victory versus Western United clash at the GMHBA Stadium on a Friday night or a Saturday night? Would that be the ultimate way to kickstart, you know, history in the making?
The ultimate start will be, you know, a packed GMHBA Stadium, 35,000 people. Yeah. And 3 points, regardless of who we play. Look, that's the ultimate. I mean, whether we achieve that or not, you know, there's 94 days till round one, the weekend of round one. We may be playing at home, we may not be. We don't know, and we won't know until the fixtures come out. But, you know, that would be the ultimate. We've set some modest targets. We know that for us it is a build. And that's no pun intended. We know the first couple of years are going to be difficult, and then we can build towards when we move into our new stadium. But we're really focused in that interim period on starting to, and I don't want to be condescending, but educating our fans, because once you're on your own stadium, we want our fans to really experience each home game as an event, and come 2 hours early and stay 2 hours after, and really activate the environment for families and football fans. So part of our role now is to educate and to excite people with the product. So we're going to be very focused on the on-field product for those 2 years, because if one thing Western Sydney Wanderers showed us in their first season, you know, they started the year, you know, by sort of round six, they had 4,000 odd members, and by the end of the year, they had 17,000 members and were competing in Asia. So, the product on the park is really, really important, and that's our focus, certainly at least until we move into our stadium, and then we can really gather some momentum.
Morris, thank you very much for your time. We'd love to talk even longer, but people can certainly on Monday rock up to the Werribee Roadshow, Ballarat on Wednesday to find out more, and it is going to be a very, very exciting next few months leading into the new A-League season. So, Morris, thank you very much for joining us here on Football Out West Show on FNR Radio.
Been a pleasure, guys, and great to be back on the Mile Radio Station. Good.
It is, yeah, exactly right. Thank you very much. And that was Morris Bassetto, the CEO of Western United. Josip, it's been a marathon 2 hour and a bit session tonight. We had the Geelong Region Soccer Show, now the Football Out West Show. From the bottom of my heart, thank you very much for coming on board here and co-hosting. And Craig Filer, big cheerio to you. He'll be back next week, or will he? You know, will he have work commitments again? But it was a pleasure having you on the board.
Thank you for having me, and thanks, Josh, for welcoming him nicely. And to the viewers and listeners, keep staying tuned. And we're loving the experience that you've put on with community media services. And the work you're doing is fantastic, and I applaud you for it.
Good on you. Thank you very much. Next week, we've got Melton Phoenix, the club focus, and we also are going to be speaking to a councillor from the City of Melton Council who will be telling us a lot about the football strategy they are adopting. In the meantime, Josh, thank you for joining us tonight. Josip, once again, thank you. And to you, the listeners and the viewers, and thank you very much for being a part of tonight's blockbuster show. Apologies for going so late, but we will try and keep it nice and succinct next time around. Until next week, good night.